speaker of the session, Shiroku Sato, and she's going to talk about when collaboration is not an option, fieldwork in COVID, Papua New Guinea.
Thank you very much. My name is Hiroko Sato. I'm a graduate student of the University of Hawaii, and I'm working on language of Papua New Guinea, Kobe. When I was doing fieldwork, one question came to my mind. So today I'd like to share my question, that is when collaboration is not an option. Himmelman 2006 gave the important features of language documentation, and one of them is collaborative work. So now collaborative work with community is one of the issues in the field of language documentation. And also he pointed out that there are two ways in which collaborative language documentation encourages the activities involvement of the speech community. So first, native speakers are the main players. And second, the activities should be little or no academic training. However, are all communities willing to collaborate with researchers? If community members are indifferent or negative towards their language, how can a researcher work with them? So here is my research questions. First, how can I collaborate with the community if collaboration is not optional? Second, should I force them to work with the researcher? Or should I wait until they realize the importance of the language? Today, I would like to talk first the background of language documentation, and then also show two case studies of successful collaborative work in different areas. And then I will discuss my experience with community members in Kobe. Then finally, I will talk about the role of researchers' work when collaboration is not an option. Himmelman 1998 notes that language documentation provides a comprehensive record of the linguistic practice characteristics of a language community. As well, Austin and Grand Nobel 2007 say that language documentation aims to record the linguistic practice and traditions of a speech community, and also to include systematic recording, transcription, translation and analysis of language data in their social and cultural context. And also it becomes accessible to a broad range of potential users. And also they discussed that this process should include not only linguists but also community members. So why is documentation important? So of course it's important for researchers, and it's important for linguists, for the subfield of linguistics, such as morphology, phonology, syntax, or typology, historical linguistics. But also, it could provide information for other academic fields, such as ethnobiology, or history, or anthropology, or ethnobotany. But it's also important for communities. Communities may advocate the survival of their language. Or if community is aware of the importance of language, documentation may be useful for language education and language policy. If language is seriously endangered or the community members lose their own language, documentation may be also useful for revitalizing a language. So again, it is important for both sides. Now, I'd like to talk about two case studies. So one case study is conducted in the North American Indigenous Language spoken at Colorado River, Indiana Tribe Reservation, discussed by Penfield and etc. This project aims to develop technology training to support community members, but it also focuses on shifting the responsibility and archiving from researchers to community members. Then, in this project, community members learn basic descriptive linguistics, collected data, and established protocols. On the other hand, university members train community members, learned about community protocols, and performed electronic formatting and archiving. So through the project, they gave recommendations how to form a relationship between the community and the linguist. Also, how to pursue community-based language documentation. Also, how to respect towards the community goal. So this is the first case study which I showed. And the second case study is shown in the New Guinea CEPIC Abakir by Dobrin 2008. Dobrin discussed the role and the rights of linguists based on collaborative work with communities. According to Dobrin 2008, the Abakir language is dominated by Tokpisin, and the youngest good speakers are all over 50s. Most of children understand only simple sentences. However, they are aware that their language is endangered, and the speakers blame what is happening on the language, blame their parents for not speaking it to them, or blame themselves for answering in Tokpisin. So community members and Dobrin re-established and ran the Abakir language preschool. Then Dobrin found some important features for researchers to have a collaborative work with communities. First of all, researchers don't play an advisory role. Second, successful project on language collaborative work is based on exchange with outsider reading to community unit and moral worth. Also, she said that collaborative work brings local people in the relationship with outsider who are associated with modernity, wealth, and power, and also who care enough to listen to people. So her observation in this area is a researcher is not advisor. Researchers themselves also have to involve in the communities and also project. And also she said that this is found throughout Melanesia and much of Oceania. So these two case studies are successful collaborative work. And the approaches to community project and ideas are different, these two case studies. But I think the common features are that community members are concerned about their languages. And also they are willing to work on language documentation in their languages. However, do all communities in Melanesian care with their languages? If we respect, or if I respect Melanesian morality, as Dobrin said, can we all have collaboration in Melanesian? Are they willing to take part in collaboration with linguists? So now I'd like to talk about my experience in Kobe. This is a village where I'm working. So Kobe is spoken in Western New Britain province, Papua New Guinea, and there are 34 villages. And according to national census, the number of people living in Kobe is 8,000, but this number doesn't reflect the number of speakers. And also there are five other indigenous languages spoken near Kobe. And recently, with modernization, educational developments, and social interactions, Tokpisin and English are used even daily life. As for education in Kobe, there are five primary schools out of 34 villages. And also there is no secondary schools, although most of children don't go to primary school nowadays, even nowadays. If they want to go to primary school, secondary school, they have to move in a capital of West New Britain. And also, Kobe is used only for the first and second year in a primary school as an instruction language. And in fact, this is it happened a couple of years ago. So before that, only English is used. And even so after second year, English, only English is used in school. And although Kobe language is used for first and second year, Kobe language or their cultures are not taught. This is my observation in terms of the use of languages. As you see, the number of languages spoken is different among different generations and also for different genders. So for example, the elder women speak only Kobe, but middle-aged women speak Kobe and Tokpisin. And the younger generation, both male and female, speak three languages. So I went to Kobe. I went to the field work four times. And in fact, I was the first foreigners they had made for most of communities. And they welcomed me, and so they accepted me as their community members and also as their family. And so since I was almost first foreigner, so they are very curious about me, but as I will discuss later, they are not curious about my research. However, I found a couple of great consultants who are cooperated and patient. So I did record some stories and text, and I started to make a dictionary and hopefully a reference grammar, which will be for my dissertation. In my own experience through field work, I found their attitude to the language for their attitude to their language is indifferent to their languages. And also they don't care whether the language is spoken or not. So now I'm going to talk about my experience and observation which could support this. So as I say, I think they welcome and accepted me as their community member and also family, but they don't care what kind of data I collect. Or also they don't care whether I make a grammar book or a dictionary. And they are curious about me, but they never curious about my work with their language. And also they don't understand why I was there and what I wanted to do. So it was hard for me to find the time to work with them on the language, but because I always went out with them just play around. So this situation made it difficult for me to spend time on my research, as I say. And second my experience is one day my consultant said this sentence to her kid in front of me, Wasim Ahemu. So Wasim is Tokpisin and Ahemu is Kobe. So this sentence is made up by both Tokpisin and Kobe. So I asked my consultant why she used both Tokpisin and Kobe in a sentence, not only Kobe. So, and then she told me that if she used only Kobe to her children, they don't understand. So they need to use Kobe, especially, they need to use Tokpisin or both Tokpisin and Kobe, especially parent, she is angry or she wants to give a strong statement to her children. So most of the community parents told me that children cannot fully understand. Also, children don't acquire Kobe. And also, parents choose Tokpisin for their communication. And also, parents don't care whether children speak Kobe or not. The third my observation is in 2007, when I went back to Papua New Guinea, I talked to older generation speakers and about my observation that young speakers are losing Kobe. And older generation speakers, all of them said they agree with my opinions. But then their reaction was, what is wrong if they lose Kobe? In addition to their indifferent language attitude, I also observed their attitude to general research. That is, their attitude to general research is awareness, and also they are not interested in working on the language. Also, they don't want to work with me. So this is one experience. In my second field work, one day my consultant stopped coming to see me, and this situation lasted for several days, so I didn't understand what happened. And then later, she came back to me and she explained that she was struggling between community members and me because community members started to tell her why she helped me and what was the advantage to her. And there is no benefit from me and my research. So community member made her stop helping me. And but I was very glad that she told me about the situation. And also she said so she was struggling with communities, but she told me finally she wanted to help me. So that's why she came back to me. However, although she was willing to help me, I realized that most of other community members have a negative feeling about my research and my visit. In my field work, I realize that I cannot collaborate with the community members. Well, maybe it's very difficult to collaborate with a community member. Partially because I might not have a good relationship with community members. Or maybe I might not satisfy their expectations, like financial expectations. However, I like them, and I hope and I want to believe that they like me, and I really enjoy staying there. So for example, the baby, this is me, but so the baby who I'm carrying is her name is Hiroko, so it's from my name. And this statue is it's statue of me, which they made. And so they made this after my first trip. And it's, in their concept, that this is a mermaid, and in their concept, mermaid is a symbol of a god female. So they think God sent me to their village. So I really enjoy this thing there, but just daily life. So problems in COVID to me is indifferent or negative language attitude, and also negative feeling to work on the language, and awareness with the importance of their language, and also indifferent in preserving the language. So for me, so far collaboration is not an option, but I want to have a collaborative work, of course, but I feel it's not option. So then what should I do? Do I not need to do anything? Or should I not work on the language documentation? I like language documentation and I like fieldwork, so I don't think so. So I think I need, of course, keep working toward it. And also I have to do my best to make a good relationship with the community. And also I need to keep talking to a community about the importance of their language. And also I want to make a foundation for documenting language for future research. So so now maybe my situation is difficult to work with them in terms of collaborative work, but maybe hopefully they might realize the importance of language and language situations eventually, or output might be useful after the language dies. So I want to keep work on my research. Thank you very much.
Thank you, because I have the same sort of reaction. I haven't found collaboration to be an option in my fieldwork, and I might suggest that it shouldn't be considered unsuccessful simply because you haven't collaborated. It does seem to be a problem that they don't like your research. I'd consider that a larger problem than the not being able to collaborate. I think if you're successfully able to work with people as consultants, that I don't think we should assume in language documentation that in every situation collaboration is going to necessarily succeed. I've faced the same problem, and I simply don't. I think it's not always going to be an attainable goal. So it's not really a question.
Thank you very much.
Just a question of clarification. You mentioned community members. In New Guinea, the word member sometimes is a member of a local government person. Are you talking about leadership of the community, or in terms of member, or are you talking about just any community person?
Any community members, yeah.
And have you worked with the, what kind of leadership structure do they have there? I'm just curious.
They have a, it's not the chief system, but they have, well, traditionally, old generations people have to be respected. And still, I think older generation have initiative to work. But nowadays, my observation is young people don't respect the old generation, so they,
but there's a local level government.
Yeah,
also,
government. Yeah.
And broken into wards, so-called wards.
No. I think that traditional hierarchy now it's getting broken. Yeah.
Just
curious, you said you went there, you've been there at least four times.
Mm-hmm.
Was this attitude towards you and your research, was that consistent, or did it change over time?
I think, it's good question.
Or did you discover it over time?
Yeah, discovered over, yeah, time. But I think when I went there the first time, they didn't think I was serious to work there. So they just accepted me as a community member. But then when I went back second time, they realized, oh, I really want to work on this language. So I also started to observe their attitudes gradually.
I know you were actually in their community, which is in a very isolated area. Is there an option of working with Kobe speakers outside of the community, and might they maybe might be more willing to work with you under those circumstances?
Mm-hmm. There are quite a few people living in a capital of Western New Britain. So I try to work with them because I realize it's very hard to work in a village.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I realize that people living in the capital Western New Britain province are losing Kobe. So their Kobe language are completely mixed with Tokpisin. And sometimes even they use loan words from Tokpisin, but they don't think that is a loan word.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it's better to inside the village.
Do they have a self-identity? I mean, do they differentiate themselves from their neighbors? And what is it bound to? If it's not bound to language, or is it bound to language? How do they? Do they view themselves as a New Britainer? Papua New Guinea,
mm-hmm.
a Kobe,
mm-hmm.
or
yeah, they have a very strong identity as being a Kobe people. So in fact, the Kobe, the term Kobe is used for only Kobe people or researchers. So outside people don't call them Kobe; they call Kombe. So they have a very strong identities to be a Kobe people.
But is it tied to their language? What makes them that? Just where they live, or they
just speak? To live there? Yeah.
I did a long survey from town. Let's see, Kimby, just to the east,
mm-hmm.
and then all the way up that peninsula. And of course, even then, long as it was. I guess when I was your age, which was about 7 years ago. And, yeah, but it was the same thing. I mean,
mm-hmm.
they were moving to Pidgin, and they weren't that interested in their language. But I was able to collect whatever data I wanted. I had tremendous
mm-hmm.
collaboration because I went with the somebody that was in the Department of Education, and then
mm-hmm.
and the guy that was assigned for Tokple schools in that area.
Mm-hmm.
So they took care of collaboration,
mm-hmm.
and I just took care of what I needed to do. And sometimes it's through, yeah, other people. Sometimes it's through the like Catholic Church, when I go to a Catholic area,
mm-hmm.
you know, the priest lines up the people and you get real good collaboration that way. So I'm wondering, what do you have in, like that, at a higher structure that people are sort of bound to? What's there that, who has authority over the people? What range of things, institutions have authority over the people?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think the people who have a strong authorities are still older should be older generations, but as I said before, so now older generation may not be respected by young speakers. But I think also people who have authority could be like teachers at the school, and yeah, and also there is a Catholic church, but there is no priest because the priest is living in Kimbe, capital. Of, so he very occasionally come to Kobe. So recently I was thinking maybe one good way could be to work with the teachers in school.
Mm-hmm. Were they ambivalent to that change too, or for what reason was it switched to Kobe if the community members don't care?
Mm-hmm.
Was it the school district telling them it would be better, or did they? Was there some reason that they wanted Kobe the school?
Mm-hmm. First of all, about 10 years ago, I'm not sure. Sorry, I don't remember that exactly it happened, but. Papua New Guinea government decided that so schools can use their local language or Tokpisin only for first and second years. But so it didn't happen in Kobe, as I said, quite recently. But so I think one of the teacher told me that the reason why they decided to use Kobe is it's better to use Kobe for children to understand school materials, because if they use only Tokpisin sometimes, not Tokpisin, if they use English, because first and second years, of course, it's the first time for them to know and to learn English, so they cannot learn for mathematics or other subjects in English, so that's why so they started to use Kobe.
Well, that's an interesting ideology there. If the parents, I'm kind of questioning if the parents
mm-hmm.
say that they have to use Tokpisin
mm-hmm.
because the children won't understand
mm-hmm.
Kobe,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time,
mm-hmm.
it was decided that Kobe must be used in the schools because the kids don't understand
mm-hmm.
English or Tokpisin.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be an interesting social linguistic
mm-hmm.
project there.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Maybe I need to look at that more.
Yeah. Is there any difference between the way that different generations look at or value Kobe? So do the older speakers, say especially the older women who only speak Kobe,
mm-hmm.
do they look at their language as being of value? Or is it the ones who have shifted already
mm-hmm.
look at Kobe as being less valuable?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think old men generations think Kobe is a variable, but like usually, this is just my observation, so I need to look at more. But from my observation, even old. Generation, old women or middle-aged women don't seem not to think Kobe is a variable. And also, of course, the young generations, it's getting less variable for them.
So then, if they speak Tokpisin,
mm-hmm.
they have more prestige socially,
mm-hmm.
the bigger?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because sometimes what I found were situations where if I was working on the less privileged language, some speakers would tell me, what do you want? You finally got from the bottom of everything to the next step over,
mm-hmm.
and now you want to take us back down
mm-hmm.
Because you want to work with that language from which we finally got out of
mm-hmm.
to gain social. So I was wondering if something like that might be happening there, that they really don't want to go to Kobe because they think that that lowers them in the social hierarchy.
So you mean, sorry, I think, I'm not
that
sure if
they
I
speak of it, they are lower in the social hierarchy. They are higher in the social hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
So why would they want to speak Kobe again? You are
oh,
on
I
see. Their view, they,
mm-hmm.
they might view you as wanting to take them down in the social hierarchy again.
I see. So, as I say, like young, especially young generations, don't put a put a low hierarchy in Kobe. So even among young generations, they use only tokpisin. But like older generations, especially old men, still use a Kobe, and. That is, I don't know, maybe I have to ask them, but yeah. But so, it's, yeah, like middle age and young generations don't now completely mix, or they tend to use tokpisin.
I think we probably have to stop here if people want to go to other sessions. So thank you very much for this.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for the laptop.
I just wanted to introduce myself.
Okay.
I'm Mary.
Hi.
I sent you an email about a month ago or so about Rabbi.
Yes.
Nice to meet you. I'm sure I'll see you around. I'm going to
okay.
run to
yes.
it.
Yeah, okay.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah.